in fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
CRIMEWAV. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit.
Consider yourselves warned.
This is R. Narvaez, and the story I'm going to read to you is In the Kitchen with Johnny Albino. As a side note, you should know that Johnny Albino was a very popular Puerto Rican singer in the 1950s and 60s, and his music was known for its romantic melancholy. People, in fact, call these songs cortavenas, literally vein slashers, because of that deep melancholy. Johnny Albino does not appear as a character in this story, but the mood of that music helps color it. In the Kitchen with Johnny Albino. It was dark when Iris awoke. She rubbed her belly where it hurt, then got up, put on her slippers, and waddled. She was a brunette, petite, pretty, and 6 months pregnant. With a big baby she knew was a boy because of the way her belly came to a point, and because she just knew. She went straight for the kitchen and to the dream book. She put it on the table face down. She tried to remember the dream, but couldn't. She lit a cigarette and went to the window. She looked outside at the clotheslines radiating from the big elm in the backyard to each building. The windows of the apartment buildings on the other side of the yard were dark, like eyes on faces before they wake up. She stared at nothing in particular. She felt that if she kept staring, she could somehow reach back to that dream. Cigarette smoke twirled around her fingers. Tree, outside, Rio, river. And there it was, the dream she had been having before the baby inside her had kicked her awake. First, it came in pieces. Then it played like a movie. A woman standing with her feet in a river, drowning. Iris did not recognize the woman, but she knew the river. It was back in Puerto Rico, near her hometown, Guayama, and the water was shallow. The woman could walk across to save herself. Iris told her so. But then a wave came, dark and red as blood, decapitating the woman, just as Iris found a knife in her hand and then a pigeon flew into her field of vision, and she was back in Brooklyn. Iris went to the table quickly. The dream book was mimeographed on cheap blue paper. The listings were crooked, on some pages clear, on others blurry. Iris had bought the book when she first came to New York City in the 60s, 10 years ago. She folded the cover back. It showed a crazy gypsy lady with a crazy smile that always spooked Iris. In these books, dreams were listed alphabetically with a 3-digit number next to each. Animal, 369. Ant, 261. Automobile crash, 673. If you dreamed about an animal one night, you were supposed to play 369 the next day and the next few days because that number was going to hit. Iris searched the D's and found drowning, 419. She wrote the number down in a little red notebook. She got up and turned on the radio, finding her favorite Spanish station. A song by Trio Los Panchos came on, one of Iris's favorites. She began to sway to its tinny rhythm. Mommy, her 4-year-old daughter Nancy, stood in the doorway of the kitchen in her pajamas. The girl had the same jet-black hair and eyes of her father. Every time Iris looked at her, she was reminded of him. Go back to bed. I'm awake. It's too early. Go back to bed. I'm hungry. Iris put out her cigarette. You want some eggs? Later, after she dropped Nancy at the pre-K school at St. Peter and Paul, she went to the bodega at the corner. The old man Negron was behind the counter, talking to his parrot. Te pegate, te pegate, the parrot said. Negron! Ratoncito, Negron said. He called it a little rat, because if the cops ever came into the store, they'd know from its limited vocabulary that numbers were being run there. But the cops never came. The parrot was bright green, Negron was a dark caramel, and missing an earlobe, which was why he'd started keeping the parrot in a cage. Iris told Negron to play her regular numbers, and then told him to play 419 for a dollar straight. A dollar straight, Negron said. Did you have a dream? A lady drowning, she said. Dios te bendiga, he said. 419, dollar straight, you got it. Later in the day, she went back to the bodega to pick up milk and see which number hit. ¿Quién pegó, Negrón? She said. 419, te pegué. The odds for Bolita, the numbers game, were 600-1. Negrón was from Guayama too, and had known Iris since she'd moved to the south side. So he didn't take his normal bookie fee of 15%. Iris had $600, more money than she had ever had at one time in her life. Iris had been laid off that summer. She considered going back to Puerto Rico again. She'd already been back and forth 15 times. She got food stamps, and sometimes she cleaned houses for cash. Her friend Maribel was in the same situation and hadn't worked in a year. They spent a lot of the day in Iris's kitchen, drinking coffee and listening to the radio until it was time to pick up Nancy. That's pretty nice money, Maribel said. You telling me, that's half a year's rent. That's pretty nice money. I have to go shopping first, then pay the rent and the electricity. And I gotta put money away for the baby. Then I start saving to buy my own restaurant, Iris's. For that, you don't got enough money. You have to dream 1,000 dreams. That's a lot of drowned ladies, Maribel laughed. Iris took a drag on her cigarette and rubbed her belly. "You know what?" Maribel said.
"What?"
"You know what? You could start your own bolita. You could make enough money and you never have to work again.
Run the numbers? Like a crook? Everybody's a crook. Look at the frickin' president. It's easy. Look at Negron. He makes easy money."
Iris nodded her head to the side.
"You have to watch out, though," Maribel said.
"Why?"
"If someone doesn't pay you, you gotta be tough. Business is business."
"I'm tough," Iris said. She looked at the window, remembering her dream. Maribel laughed.
"Little Iris the crook."
"Maribel," Iris said. Then she got up and took pork chops out of the freezer for dinner. When she got back from the school with Nancy, the girl's father was sitting on the couch in the living room, having a beer. The light was off, but his sad, handsome face was lit by the television.
"Papi!"
Nancy jumped on the couch and hugged her father around the neck. He kept his eyes on the TV. Iris turned on the light.
"What's new?" he said to Iris.
"I hit the number."
"Vaya, let's go celebrate. We could go to the Copa."
"Así," she said, pointing to her belly.
"No, thank you. That money is for me and la niña and the baby. I'm going to start my own bolita, I decided."
"What you going to do that for?"
The little girl tried to sit in his lap. The father sipped his beer.
"So I can make a lot of money. I can make enough money to buy a restaurant."
"That's crazy. Pregnant women are crazy. They get crazy ideas."
"Don't call me crazy, Juan," Iris said.
"What if somebody hits big? They'll take your whole bank."
Iris had met Juan years ago at a club. He got her pregnant, but he wouldn't marry her. He hung around, giving her some money for a while. He got her pregnant again, but then hadn't given her any money in months. Iris would tell him she needed to buy groceries and pay rent, but she got tired of asking and knew she would get the money on her own anyway, somehow. She fought with him, but not so much to push him away.
"That's not going to happen," she said. "No one's going to hit that much."
"Papi, I want to go to Coney Island."
Juan moved his daughter off of him.
"Let me have another beer," he said to Iris.
"Get it yourself."
He got up and went to the kitchen, where Iris was smothering the defrosted pork chops with adobo.
"You're a rich woman. Now you can support me," he said, turning on the radio.
A slow, melancholy love song was starting. Iris heard it and cursed under her breath.
"You never supported me," she said.
"I don't want to argue, baby."
Just as she thought he would, Juan took Iris in his arms and began to dance slowly with her, humming to the old Johnny Albino song. Iris was stiff at first, then she melted and molded herself to his body, her round belly up against his taut stomach.
"You're my baby, and you got my baby in there."
They danced slowly in place, shuffling on the kitchen linoleum. Nancy watched from the doorway and giggled, covering her mouth. Iris picked up Nancy at school, then decided to go to Negron's to get milk. As soon as she opened the door, the parrot said,
te pegate, Negron.
Hello, parrot, Nancy said.
She's getting big, Negron said, looking at the little girl.
Tell me about it, Iris said. He sat on his stool behind the counter. He had once been a big man, but now was bent over with age. He rarely moved from the stool, but the store was always well stocked and neat. The parrot was silent behind him, munching on one sunflower seed after another. Iris told Negron about her plan, and then assured him that she would still play numbers with him. "Don't worry about it. There's plenty of business for everybody," he said. "Every jíbaro in the neighborhood plays numbers, and every other jíbaro runs a bolita." Negron told her not to write a lot down, if anything. He told her not to spend all her money. And then he reached under the counter, balancing himself with one hand, and took out a cracker tin. Inside it was a greasy rag, and inside the rag was an old, dented .38 revolver. "You need any help, you let me know." "Aye." Iris looked at her daughter, who was staring at the parrot. "Gracias, Negron," she said. Iris knew some ladies back at the elementary school where she used to work liked to play the numbers.
"So you got your own numbers game," said Mrs. Killian in a thick South Carolina accent.
Killian was a large black woman who taught second grade.
"You're an enterprising woman, Iris. I like that. I always play 731 because the first time I hit the numbers, it was July 31. So I'll play that straight and combination."
"Aye, Iris, God bless you," said Olga, one of her old co-workers. "The woman I used to play with moved to Queens. I hope you bring me luck."
Maribel also played with her, quarters here and there, but Juan would not.
"You don't want to prove that I'm crazy?" Iris said.
"I don't have any money," he said.
"Then how do you eat? How do you live?"
"I work, but I don't got any money to spare on gambling. I need to make more money."
"It takes money to make money," Iris said.
Iris got into the routine of buying the morning and evening daily news. 2 3-digit hit numbers came out every day. The daily numbers came from the track handle, the amount of money bet at the races, at whatever track was featured in the news that morning. The nightly number came from the handle at Yonkers. While Nancy was at school, Iris would sit by the phone and her customers would call in. Maribel would play only a quarter on 561. Mrs. Killian would play up to $10 in numbers and always 731. In the first week, Iris made $100. She went to the kitchen cabinet and took down the ceramic pitcher she'd received as a bonus when she worked for the Prince Spaghetti Factory in the neighborhood. It had closed a long time ago. She kept her money inside the pitcher in a tight roll wrapped by a rubber band. She sat down and laid out her original $600 and her newest earnings on the table. She lit a cigarette and looked at the neat piles. "My God," she said. If this kept up, she would have no problem paying rent for the first time in years. It meant, she hoped, that she wouldn't have to go running back to Guayama ever again. She had worked for this, so what if it was illegal? Everybody was a crook. Everything was okay as long as she didn't get caught. "Wow, Mommy." It was Nancy, standing in the dark doorway.
"You should be sleeping."
"That's a lot of dollars, Mommy."
"That's right. This is our money. This is for us."
"I'm hungry."
Iris got up and poured a glass of milk for her daughter. As Nancy drank it, Iris said, "You want to go shopping tomorrow?"
We can go downtown to McCrory's and the toy store and get you a new dress.
Really, really?
Really. Now go to bed.
How about Bobby?
The girl's father hadn't called or come over all week. Aye, Nancy, we'll see. Iris had never even known her own father. All she had was an old picture that someone had crumpled up. After she put Nancy to bed, Iris picked up the phone, then put it down. She wanted a beer, but instead poured herself a glass of milk. She shut off the radio, then picked up the phone again. Juan sounded tired, half asleep.
Gah! Juan, it's me.
Why are you calling me?
What happened? Where have you been?
Don't call me here. Don't ever call me.
You got a daughter here who loves you and misses you, and you got a son on the way.
Don't call me. And then he hung up.
Juan!
Iris took a big drag on her cigarette.
Come mierda,
she said. But then she collapsed, crying, onto the chair. It had been snowing. Iris had not heard from Juan in more than a month. Every day Nancy asked where her father was, and Iris had to lie, had to say he would be coming soon. She knew that no matter what she said, her daughter's heart was breaking every day. Christmas was coming soon, at least, and Iris was happy. After 2 months with her bolita, with some people hitting now and then, she was doing pretty well. She dropped her daughter off at school in the morning, then picked up the daily news at Negron's and came home. Because of the snow, Yonkers was closed. The track handle that day came from Tampa Bay. The hit number was 731.
Ah, shit, Iris said.
Yesterday, Mrs. Killian had said she was feeling lucky and had played $2 on her favorite number.
Coño, Iris said.
She got up slowly. The baby was due any day. She went into the cabinet and got down the pitcher from the high shelf. She put it on the table and removed the roll of money. Something looked wrong. She didn't want to think about it. She took off the rubber band, and it snapped on her hand.
Coño!
It left a red mark. She counted the money. Then she counted it again.
Coño, Iris said.
Mrs. Killian's hit meant she won $1,200. The last time Iris had looked at her money, there was more than $1,300. Now there was less than seven. Had she bought something? Did she put it somewhere else? She couldn't seem to remember right. And then the phone rang.
Iris, good morning, said Mrs. Killian. It's a really good morning.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? I am está muy bueno, Iris. 731 hit. I hit.
Yes, yes, you did, Iris said. She could think of nothing else to say.
So when you coming around with a premio? I could use it this month, with the holidays and all. You coming at lunch? After work? You want me to come get it?
No, no, I'll bring it to you, Iris said. But I may not get a chance today, the baby...
Don't tell me that, Miss Iris. I need that money. Don't make me come get it now, Mrs. Killian said. And she laughed. But it was not a funny laugh.
I'll bring it to you, don't worry.
Iris hung up and went to the window and looked out at the big elm and the backyard. Before she came to New York, she had never seen snow. During her first snowfall, she thought it was pretty, the way it covered the dark, low brown buildings of Brooklyn, the way it
seemed to turn the neighborhood into something from a fairy tale. Now, in the silent kitchen, she tried to see beyond the snow-covered backyard, beyond the fairy tale. She turned, put on her coat, and went to Negron's. She just needed to talk to him to understand what to do next. The snow blew in her face, and it was hard to see more than a few feet. But as she crossed the street, it looked like Negron's door was open. Snow was mounding in the entrance, and for the second time that day, Iris felt something was wrong. She went to cross the street. A car sped directly toward her and swerved to the right, spraying gray slush to avoid hitting her. She did not hear the driver screaming at her. Once inside the store, she was shocked. Negron was on the floor in front of the counter, face down. Iris was shocked first to see him out of place, then to see his whole body laid out on the wooden floor. And then there was the blood. It was dark red and leaked from under him. Negron, she called. Negron! The parrot called from behind the counter. For a crazy moment, Iris thought the parrot sounded worried. She got on her knees and touched his shoulder. Then she bent and moved him. He moaned. She turned him over. Negron! The parrot called.
Buenos dias, Negron said. ¿Qué pasó? And it's so close to Christmas, he said.
Blood poured from a big gash in his head, all over his shirt and face, but he was conscious. Slowly, he told Iris that some kid had come in while he was cleaning. The kid pulled a gun. Negron was going to smack him.
Sin vergüenza, Negron called him. Shameless.
But the kid had stepped back and shot him. Iris called an ambulance and then Negron's nephew, who worked in the neighborhood. When the ambulance came, she asked them if Negron would live. They didn't know. His nephew told her to go, that he would wait for the cops if they ever arrived. While the nephew was busy, Iris made a decision. She moved to the back of the counter, got the cracker tin, and then the .38. She put it under her coat. Dios te bendiga, she said to no one in particular, and then left. She went to the corner and called a car service. The car service took her to an address in East New York. Iris told the driver, a Dominican, to wait. She was not surprised when a woman answered the door, keeping it barely open. From what Iris could see, the woman was pretty, a little on the heavy side, and very young. She looked familiar. May I help you? The lady said. Iris considered putting the gun in the lady's face to make her open the door. But then she looked down and saw that the woman was pregnant too. I'm here to see Juan, Iris said. The woman said nothing. She stepped back and opened the door. The house was cold. Iris couldn't hear the radiators working. She stepped in, and for a second the two women faced each other, big bellies pointing forward. Then Iris followed the woman's turning gaze to an inner door. As she moved past the woman, Iris realized what was familiar about the lady's face. She looked like the crazy gypsy lady from the cover of the dream book. Iris did not want to turn her back on her, but the door was in front of her, so she went to open it. It was dark inside. "Juan," she said softly, and then louder. Something rustled in the sheets in the darkness. She reached over and turned on the light. Juan was in bed, lying face down. He turned his head to look up at her, his jet black hair a mess. "What the fuck are you doing here?" "I've never seen where you live, Juan. You never brought me. I wanted to see it." "You're crazy. If this is about her..." "It's not about that. It's about business." "You're crazy." "Well, you told me pregnant women are crazy." "Your little friend must be crazy then too," Iris said, and then moved closer to the bed. "I want my $600. "What $600? Juan remained on his stomach, not bothering to fully look at her. Iris figured he was naked under the sheets. She knew that he liked to sleep that way. She took a step closer to the bed, took out the old 38, and touched it to his left foot, then moved it up his leg slowly till she got to his butt cheeks. "This could do a lot of damage, Juan. I can't imagine how long it would take to clean the sheets." "You're crazy." "You have my money." He moved, and she backed away. "Careful. I may be slow, but a bullet is very fast." He opened a drawer and took out his wallet. He threw a messy wad of bills on the floor. Slowly, keeping the gun pointed at him, Iris bent down and picked up the money. There was a sudden sharp pain in her belly. She almost screamed, but she kept it in. She had learned long ago to keep in pain. She took the money and counted. "There's only 300 here. That's all I got. It's my money. You owe me a lot more. Get the fuck out of here." Iris put the money in her purse. "Fine, but you gotta visit your daughter. She loves you. I can't stop that. But a girl shouldn't be without her father, good or bad." "You're crazy, Iris." She put the gun right behind where his testicles would be. "We'll see you for Christmas then." "Fuck, okay, okay." As Iris left, the young girl stood against the sink. She had a large knife in her hand. She said nothing, but her eyes were full of fear and hate. Iris thought about making the young girl's head disappear, but figured the poor thing was going to have enough trouble already. And something was happening to Iris. She knew she had to get moving. She looked straight ahead and walked out the door. The girl never moved. There was blood everywhere. It flowed like a river and covered the back seat of the car service sedan. "Avanza!" Iris screamed. The driver talked too fast for her to understand. Her water broke in the car and the liquid pooled dark and red and viscous at the bottom of her feet. She would make it, she told herself. She was a survivor. The car made slow progress through the snow-covered streets. Iris saw whiteness covering the windows, smothering the car. And then all she saw was black. Later, in the hospital, she opened her eyes and saw Nancy. "Hija," Iris said.
Titi Maribel brought me.
Maribel's voice came from somewhere to Iris's left. Your son is fine. I saw him. He's beautiful. A full head of hair.
Iris stroked her daughter's face. And then the girl put something in her hand. Iris looked. It was a roll of money.
You said it was ours, the little girl said, and giggled.
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.